Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Jeff Robinson. Podcast is called Let's Talk About Sax, and that's what we do. We talk about the saxophone. We're going to continue our series here. This is the last of the three with Kim Parker, Charlie Parker's daughter, ladies and gentlemen. Had a nice conversation with her. In fact, I had to cut it short because we're good friends and we ended up talking maybe like 2 or 3 hours that time, and I had to edit it down. Yeah, so we're going to just segue right into this last installment of the three with Kim Parker, Charlie Parker's daughter. Charlie Parker is the greatest saxophonist ever. So let's get it going right into this interview. Again, I was listening to some of your music, and I just went on Spotify to see if you have anything. You have a couple of records, quite a few, 3 or 4 records out there, and one of them that I really liked was a trio record you did with this gentleman, Hakan. Is that how you say his name?
Hakan.
Yeah.
Oh, you got the Swedish album.
Yeah, exactly, the trio, Beautiful Friendship is the name, Beautiful Friendship.
Yeah. And Real Emotional Girl is my favorite.
Okay, I listened to the whole thing. I'll go back to
that. That is absolutely from my heart. And on another album I did a Swedish tune. That was one of my Italian albums. I did a Swedish tune, and then my mother put lyrics to a Swedish tune, which I recorded.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I recorded 2 or 3 Swedish tunes. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Håkan and the guys and I, we were together for like at least 14 years or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, no. All right, I think we got together in 1988. And I was living at the Deerhead from 95 until the year 2000 when I bought my house.
Mm-hmm.
So I was living at the Deerhead, which is a wonderful club here. It's like the oldest jazz club in America.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about it.
Yeah. I got a call from Håkan, and he said, "Kim, we need the liner notes." And I'd forgotten I was supposed to write them. So I just sat down and wrote them, fired them off to him.
You wrote them right then?
I just wrote them right then, at my kitchen table at the Deerhead.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to find that. There were no liner notes on the Spotify.
Oh, so they probably pinched it and just...
It's somewhere. I'll find it. It's somewhere.
I'll take a picture of it and send you an email.
That would be great. Yeah. I'd appreciate that.
But those guys, they were so great. Håkan is, in fact, I heard from him last week, and I owe him a letter. He's wondering how I'm doing with the virus and everything, and they're getting worse in Sweden today,
right.
I heard.
Right.
Anyway, Håkan is, he's fabulous. He's a fabulous man.
Mm.
He's so unflappable. And I don't know, through my mother was my agent.
Oh,
and, when she wasn't too juiced, she got me some good gigs. And so she got me 3 weeks in Sweden.
Hmm.
And then they wanted her, too.
Oh, wow.
Because Bird went to Sweden.
Right, I remember that. That's true.
So, I mean, they're hopping for the return of Bird.
Right, in any way.
Via me.
Yeah.
So the guy who put it all together, he sort of ran the theater in Helsingborg where Bird played. No, Bird didn't play at that theater, but he ran the more classical, the theatrical theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so he did all the bookings. He got us into the jazz club in Helsingborg, and then we went all the way to the tippy top of Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks in a van.
Right. Wow.
With Holger was the theatrical guy. Holger, well, he also raised minks and would club them to death and put them in the freezer over the winter until they could skin them. I mean, my mother and I sleeping in the basement of his house, and the only words of Swedish I remember are "Femtioåtta på förgatan."
Right.
And that was our address.
Oh, okay.
That's all I remember. That's all I learned. And anyway, so he would drive, and then there were four of us in the band. No, five, wait a minute, four of us in the band, my mother and me. So that was seven people in this van.
Right.
Plus my mother's oversized coat, which was named the Bear. I mean, and then we had the cymbals and the drums and the bass. I mean, you know, we had it all.
Right.
And we went all over Sweden for 3 weeks. And Holkan, we opened up in Helsingborg, which was like hometown, right? We opened up there. Holkan never used a piece of sheet music the whole time we worked together.
Hmm.
Years. Years later, never used a piece of sheet music. Because, you know, I mean, I just crossed my fingers. I got 3 weeks in Sweden with a band I don't know. Hmm. And it was just like, it was like butter.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful. It sounds really, you know, I loved it. I loved it. Simple as that.
Well,
I loved it.
Yeah. Well, when you go in with an open heart, you know, you're in a position to get a nice surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I traveled all over Europe by myself.
Hmm.
You know,
with that band.
Yeah, but no, but just to get to where we would hook up. I mean, you know, it would, because I was in Paris, they were in Malmö.
Oh, I know.
For Sweden. Right. You know, so there was a lot of travel involved, and of course that added to the cost of our bookings.
Right.
But I was so at home. I was so at home with these guys. Now on the album, I think there's only Holkan and not the other guys I normally worked with.
Okay.
Because that was sort of at the end of our touring life in Sweden.
Right. How did respond to your music? How did the audience respond?
Oh, it was so, beautiful. You know what I love best? What I love best is when we end the tune, and there is no response. And then there's wild applause.
Mm.
Because wherever we took them, they had to take their time to get back.
Mm.
applauding.
Right. Right.
And that is the most rewarding. I think that's the most rewarding thing. I would rather have that than people jumping up, stamping their feet, and yelling "Bravo." To have just to take somebody so far away that they had to take the time to get back and react to it.
You had them where you want them, you know?
Well,
you had them in the palm of your hand.
Well, but it's not that I set out in a devious way to do that. I hope to deliver it so that is the takeaway, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing calculated about it. It's just, if I feel I'm doing well and I get that response, and that's the thrill for me.
Yeah, you probably got yourself in a zone. The band was in a zone and feeling, you know, so connected, and you brought the audience along with you.
Well, yeah. I mean, that should be the goal of every entertainer. I have made so many people cry. And it's just the most wonderful thing.
You should continue to sing, Kim. You really should. You have a wonderful voice.
I know. But
we'll figure that out too. We'll figure it out.
The booking the gigs and doing the stuff and the stuff and the stuff and the stuff. You know, it's very exhausting. And how old are you?
I understand what you're saying.
How old are you?
I am very old.
Very old.
Yeah. Well, I'm in my 50s. I'll put it like that.
Okay. You're probably older than me, then.
Yeah. I am. I'm older than you. But look, if you did, you don't have to do it every night. You have to go on the road. You can do a couple of nights at the Dearborn there.
No, they don't care about me anymore.
Well, when the Dearborn comes back.
No, the Deerhead.
Deerhead, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
I got that wrong.
Yeah,
when they come back after after the quarantine and things get back together.
Here's my problem. I always want to do new tunes, and I just, my short-term memory is a disaster.
Hmm.
And I don't like to read lyrics when I'm on the stand.
Right.
Other people do, but I think, you know, it takes you out of the zone, you know.
Right.
They can't be in the zone if they see you're looking at the lyrics.
No, the instant you start looking at the lyrics, you are not in the zone.
That's right. So that's really my problem. I mean, you know, being honest about it.
I understand.
I can sing old tunes. I can sing tunes that I learned when I was 16, you know.
I think people would like to hear that. I'm sure people would love to hear
like,
that.
New York, I dig. New York, I dig. I put my wig by the street, I dig. Whatever walking, I can't pass. Here's about that street. You get it?
Yeah. Do that. I think people would love it. I think you should do it. You know, and you don't have to go on the road. You don't have to, you know, but one a month, one every other month. You know,
all right. Let me tell you the other reason I don't want to sing anymore. Because I'm sick of people looking at their cell phones.
Yeah. I know what you're going to
say. I cannot do it.
Yeah.
I cannot do it. It angers me.
Yeah.
Because if I'm on stage, you better be looking at the stage.
Yeah. No, I understand that. They have some, clubs and some situations where they tell people to turn off your phone. And if we see you with your phone, we're going to come up to you and we're going to tell you to turn it off. Where was I? I was in D.C. They have that wonderful club there. It was the Alley, the Blues Alley.
Blues Alley, yeah.
And that's what they were saying, like, turn off your phones before you turn, give them time to turn them off. So there are some places where, you know, you just got to make sure you tell people that in advance. And I've done some performances like that, too, where I tell people, no taking pictures, no video, no nothing.
You what know? Are you going to pay money to get in so you can sit there and look at your damn phone?
Yeah, I know. I know.
That's ridiculous.
It is.
I mean, just stop and think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
Think about the person up on the stage, you know.
Yeah.
Think about, you know, it's like, you know, we're in this pandemic and these people are at the grocery stores, you know,
mm-hmm.
manning the cashiers and manning the stock and doing all this stuff behind the scene. And, you know, they don't get any recognition because you just expect it to be there. So maybe it's like if they go into a club, they just expect there to be, you know, music and they can just have it as background. Who knows?
Yeah, that's one of the issues just in certain situations where people do go out and they music, it's background music. And I've definitely been in that situation. But you just have to tell the audience, okay, you know, you're here to listen. And if you're not here to listen, you should leave and get your money back now before we get started, you know? So I've been in that situation.
Yeah, but then, you know, when you do that, it sort of makes people feel defensive. And, so you're setting up that vibe before you even start.
That's true.
And if what you're going to do is elevate them, you know, you can't start out like that.
That's true. You can't come at them that way.
No.
That's very true. That's very true. You gotta be. That's right. That's right. Well, you do have a great voice, and I'm, you know, and. Yeah, again, I'm going to make sure people hear it on this podcast. I'm going to put some links up. And we're going to work on your website, I promise you. I do some web design. So we're going to get your website up there. I'm going to post some of your music. We're going to, your stories. And, you know, people, you know, you're still very much out there in your talent. So we're going to make sure that you're,
I'm not dead yet.
Exactly.
You know?
You're very much alive. So.
I did want to tell you, before I put out my three albums for Soul Note in the early 80s, Soul Note, the Italian company, which no longer exists, when I first came out, I did not take the name Kim Parker, which is my name.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not take the name Kim Parker, because it was shortly after I learned all the chords at the piano, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about singing as a career, because having my son just gave me so much energy.
Mm-hmm.
Will you remind me of that? I want to take a tangent.
Okay.
So my son was about a 6 months old or something.
Right.
And I got up one morning and a voice inside my head said, run. And I said, what? Run. I said, no, you got the wrong person. I don't run. Run.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, nag, nag, nag. And I got on my sneakers. I only had sneakers. That's all I had. And I had like 2 inches of snow on the ground. And we lived across from the towpath where they used to have the mule barges in early commerce days.
Yeah.
Anyway, the towpath was flat. And I ran up and I ran down and I got home and my husband said, where were you? the cars are here. Where were you? And I said, oh, I was out running. And he said, but you don't run. And I said, well, I do now. I ran 2 miles. And then I started running every day. So that gave me all this energy. Okay. Oh, I remember where I got back to my place. Okay. So that was at the time that I decided, okay, they had second annual CODA, a celebration of the Arts Jazz Festival here where I live in Delaware Water Gap. And so they asked if I wanted to, you know, have a set. And I said, yeah. And I said, they said, well, what is going to be the name of the band? And I said, well, I don't want to be Kemp Parker. So the next day, I only had 24 hours to get them a name. And so, I changed my name to Kim Ibeko. Ibeko.
Ibeko.
Yeah.
Hmm.
People said, well, how'd you come up with that name? First of all, most people thought I was married to a Japanese person.
Right.
But people said, where'd you get that? How come Ibeko? And I said, well, they're all letters that I like. What is the truth? I mean, it just popped into my head, you know. Had a K in it. That was good.
Cool.
You know. So I performed because the festival hadn't gotten itself together yet. So we only had a flatbed truck on a dead end street, you know.
Right.
But I mean, it was fantastic. It was just hip people playing there. And we hadn't gotten the organization quite together yet. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so this guy heard me. His name was Larry Gelb. And he said, I am making an album right now and I want you on it. So I made 2 albums with Larry Gelb. One under the name of Ibeko, and that was called New Souls. And it's only on vinyl. And then the second one, I think I was Kemp Parker, and that was called Language of Blue. Language of Blue. And I got a lot of stories for those tunes, but you know, you have no reference, so it doesn't matter. But anyway.
That's Larry, a great story. I'll have to Google and find that.
Well, the sad story is that Larry died last Sunday. And he spent a miserable end of his life being non-communicative. And he's a lot on my mind these days. But that's where, I mean, those first gigs were not the festival gig, but the first gigs.
Those first gigs.
Thereafter were with him.
Right.
And I was sort of, I was his muse. I mean, he was writing tunes like Can't Get a Gig in Iran. I try as hard as I can. but he wrote a beautiful song, called To Bird With Love.
Right.
And I have it right here. You want to hear it?
Well, I don't know. This is going to, I can edit this part out. Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
All right.
Wow. That was wonderful. You should record that. We got to figure out how to record
that. I think I did.
Oh, you did?
I think I did.
Okay. I'll find it.
Okay. I think it's on the Language of Love album.
Okay. All right.
But my turntable, I don't know if it's the needle or the turntable. Anyway, it's dragging. It's not. I can't really play anything right now.
No, it's fine. I'll find it. I'll find it online. It's not hard to find. Things are not that difficult to find.
All right. Here it is. Language of Love. The Language of Blue. Excuse me.
Okay, I saw that one. I saw
sometimes
that.
Sometimes it was red, but mainly it was blue. Featuring Kim Parker, Larry Gelb. And, Suburban Love's on it.
Yeah, okay. That was great. That was wonderful.
And If You Dig Phil Woods and Jazz at the Philharmonic. And because Bird Love Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Hopalong Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote, I don't think it's not on this album. He wrote a tune called Waltz for Gabby Hayes.
Oh, okay.
You remember Gabby Hayes?
Yeah, I don't.
It was like Roy Rogers' sidekick.
Yeah, I remember reading
Roy Rogers' sidekick or something.
Right.
Yeah. And then I don't know if I told you the story. He and I were doing a duo in this Irish bar over in Wilkes-Barre or someplace. And I knew we were in for trouble when I walked in. Because Larry's, he's very off-putting.
Right.
He's very, so on the way there, because he had to have, he couldn't drive because he couldn't even cross the street by himself. So he couldn't drive. So we got a ride there. And on the way, I was telling him this story about my fantasy when I was like 4 years old or something about Picasso. Did I tell you this story?
No, you haven't told me this.
Well, so I was telling this story about every time I was bad, I would run to Picasso's house and it was black and purple and he would say, "Come in, little girl." I'm telling him the story, and he was sort of spaced out. He wasn't really listening to me. The next morning, he called me up. He was writing it as I was speaking it.
Hmm.
He had written, he could do this. He wrote all his tunes with melodies all at one time.
Hmm.
So he could write the melody and the lyrics at the same time.
Oh, wow.
We never knew anybody who could do that.
Yeah, that's history. Yeah.
Yeah. So, can I sing you one more little tune?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Wonderful. You gotta keep singing. We'll again. I'm gonna help you figure it out. I don't know exactly how just yet, but I am gonna help you figure it out.
Isn't that so beautiful?
It is. It really is.
I mean, you know, to get home from the gig is like 1 in the morning. He calls me up at 10 in the morning, and he's got this whole thing already done.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And it comes from you. You were inspired.
I will tell you one more little story.
Okay.
All right, so I took him to Europe right after we did the first album. Mom got us a few gigs and, you know, it was adventure. So we went. And so we were hanging out at the house in Chamartu in the country outside of Paris. And Larry was just so obnoxious because he's so fastidious. And he's like, you know, he makes us little jumpy motions with his hands and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he was just out of his element. So we were going to, we were taking the train into Paris, Larry and me, and we got into an argument on the train. And when the train came into the station, it wasn't supposed to do that, but it did. The door opened before the train stopped, and I jumped off a moving train to get away from him.
Oh, my.
I ran Right. And so I knew right where I was, and I headed across the River Seine, and I hauled ass over to the Champs-Élysées, and he's trying to keep up behind me, and I ran up the Champs-Élysées.
Wow.
And finally, I stopped, and he caught up with me, and then he pissed me off again. So I crossed 8 lanes of traffic because he couldn't follow me.
Oh, my. What?
And I started running down the Champs-Élysées on the other side. And so I looked back, and I saw him, like, you know, trying to stop traffic, going over 8 lanes of traffic on the Champs-Élysées. And then I heard him, and he really sounded in distress, so I turned around. The cops had stopped him on the other side of the Champs-Élysées. He didn't speak a word of French. He didn't have his passport, which was a big no-no.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to go back and rescue him.
Right.
He wrote a song called That One Night in Paris. It was too funny, I'll tell you.
You gotta write it all down, Kim. That's a really good story. You gotta write it down.
I know. Yeah. Well, I should probably do it as interviewed by, you know.
Yeah.
And I just turn on the tape and let me roll.
Yeah.
I have so many parallel universes in my head.
Right.
You know, that one story runs into another, and then I got to get back to what I was talking about, and because they're all connected in my mind.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, but you.
Well, it needs to be archived. It needs to be archived. You've lived an extraordinary life, and probably more extraordinary than you realize. And it has to be archived. I'm going to work with you on it, and I mean that. So. You know, but we probably should, you know, I'll call you right back. But we probably should end the interview because we've been going on for about an hour and a half, maybe more. And I don't know if, my software can handle it.
Yeah, I
guess. Yeah, but I'll call you right back. I'll call you like in 5 minutes.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, but.
All right.
Yeah, I'll call you right back.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Let's talk about sax. Wonderful time there talking to Kim. Great person, great friend. Had to edit out her singing because of copyright issues and didn't want somebody coming after me. But you can go on to our website, Let's Talk About Sax. I have some links to her singing. Also, some other links about helping her get her website developed. Need your help in that. Yes, very excited to have interviewed her. Let's talk about sax, y'all. That's the name of this show. Very glad to have met her. Yes. I'd like to thank Reactor Productions for this theme song, Joe Stewart for sound reinforcement. I'd like to thank Anchor for podcast distribution. I'd like to thank my wife, Jane, my editor, Rebecca Robinson, one of the inspirations for this podcast, Miles Robinson. I'd like to thank Levitate Web Solutions for producing the podcast. Gonna have our addendum about Kim's web presence, and you need to help on that. And then we're gonna go to our next installment, Dave Chisholm, who did the graphic novel about Charlie Parker. Nice interview with him. Let's talk about sex, y'all.